Hello, everyone, and welcome to Super Metal World. This is Michael.
My name is Aegon Targaryen.
Oh my god.
This is Ty. What up?
Danielle is with us this week. Hi, Danielle. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm just judging my boyfriend for being dumb.
That's fine. I am judging him as well. This week...
I have my birth certificate. I have my vehicle registration.
Social security number.
Do you want further proof?
This week, we are doing according to a non-metalhead, and we are focusing on the classic Iron Maiden album, The Number of the Beast, which I'm looking forward to. I don't think I've actually, before we started preparing for this episode, I don't think I had listened to that album like front to back in a single sitting. So I think it'll be interesting.
Ditto. I agree. I think neither of us have been like on the Iron Maiden bandwagon, but not for like, I don't know. I just never dug into them, I guess. But
yeah, I've never heard you talk about them before.
But this was a pleasant surprise, I think, that we'll get into later. So how this works is we're doing According to a Non-Metalhead. Danielle is our resident non-metalhead. And we have her listen to an album that she's never heard before. And it's always a metal album, usually a classic. In the past, we've done Black Sabbath's Paranoid. We've done Rainbow's Rising, which is one of the albums to feature Ronnie James Dio. Last time we did this, we did Metallica's Master of Puppets. And today we do Iron Maiden's The Number of the Beast. So some truly iconic albums there in metal lore and history. And we talk about each track. Danielle says what she thinks about the track. Michael says what he thinks about the track. And I kind of moderate the two of them to kind of bring all the ideas together. So we don't really like, it's not like a deep dive on the album, although I do sprinkle some quick facts throughout this discussion. It's more talking about the kind of interpretation with somebody who has no experience with a particular album to somebody who's like familiar and comfortable in the metal side of things. So anyway, that's how this works. We'll get right to it. We do have a website, www.supermetalworld.com. Last week, we talked about some Nickelback songs that are actually pretty good, and we had Chad Kroeger. Chad Kroeger joined us on that one to share some demos. I think I still like have chills when I listen to them, don't you, Michael?
It's amazing to hear that early Nickelback stuff. Like, you really get a good look into the writing process. It's amazing.
Yeah. Thanks, Chad. Thanks for sending those, Chad. Really appreciate it. So you can go, you can check out podcasts like that and all our previous podcasts at that website. We're everywhere that you stream a podcast. I think my voice just cracked, but I don't care. We're everywhere that you stream a podcast. Please go to iTunes, rate and review. 5 stars only. Write a nice little review for us. Share it with your friends. You can find us on all social media. Give us a like, give us a follow. We have an email, supermetalworld@gmail.com. Let's get into Iron Maiden, The Number of the Beast. Horns high.
Horns high.
It's always nice to put things into context, so I'm going to start with some quick facts about The Number of the Beast. It was released the 22nd of March, 1982. It was recorded around from January to February of 1982, so just about a month there. The studio was Battery Studios in London, England. It is a heavy metal album, of course. The length of the album is a brisk 39 minutes and 11 seconds. The label is EMI. The producer is Martin Birch. This was the first to feature Bruce Dickinson on the vocals. It's the first album to reach number one in the UK albums charts for the band and to reach the top 40 of the Billboard 200 in the USA. The album was produced, or excuse me, the album has produced singles Run to the Hills and The Number of the Beast. And the former was a top 10 single in the UK. And the release itself saw Steve Harris adopt a different approach to writing, which would cater more for the new vocalist Bruce Dickinson. The album's producer, Martin Birch, remarked, "I simply don't think former vocalist Paul Di'Anno was capable of handling lead vocals on some of the quite complicated directions I knew Steve wanted to explore. When Bruce joined, it opened up the possibilities for the new album tremendously."
What
I mean, heck? I get the British, but what the hell accent was that?
That was a few of them.
It was a few accents.
A few of them that came to my mind as I was talking.
Rub-a-dub-dub.
And I also have had about 3 cups of coffee. bother. According to several interviews, Dickinson was heavily involved in the writing of several of the album songs, and in particular the tracks Children of the Damned, The Prisoner, and Run to the Hills. Due to his previous band Samson's ongoing contractual issues, Dickinson could not legally have any writing credit on those particular tracks. So, the recording and mixing of the album had to be completed in only 5 weeks. After the band had spent too long constructing these new songs, this was allegedly because the group, for the first time, were creating a new album from scratch with, like, next to no material written prior to the pre-production stage. So they kind of had to write, like, everything as it was being recorded, you know? Like, it was just a...
Oh, sure.
It just was a quick process. They didn't have any previous material, you know, that they had written on the road or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
They had to write this as it happened, pretty much. So anyhow, let's just, I got more for you guys, but I'm going to save it for now. Let's get into who Iron Maiden is. We got Bruce Dickinson on the lead vocals. We have Dave Murray on the guitars, Adrian Smith, also guitars and backing vocals. Steve Harris, who is a big force in the writing department. He is the bass guitarist, and he also does the backing vocals. And Clive Burr was on the drums. I think this is the last album to feature old Clive, old Clivey boy. So anyway, let's get to track number one, Invaders! Thank you, Danielle. Okay. Michael, what do you think about this track?
You know, the first time I listened to... I didn't know... I'll be honest, the first time I listened to this song, I didn't like it. Like, I really didn't like it. I thought it was dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listened to it, you know, as I continued to listen to this album. It started to grow on me, and I started to appreciate the song as an opener for what this album is. So,
right.
Obviously, Steve Harris is an incredible bassist. And, like, one of the greatest bassists in all of metal. And he's, like, way up in the forefront in a lot of all of the tracks. He's very prominent. And that was something that I really attached to in this song in particular, because there's like the all of the various like kind of spidery riffs that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that the content about like Vikings coming to shore and invading, they're the invaders, right? The Vikings. And like, I love that material. I think the material in this song and for most of the rest of the album is really good in terms of lyrical content. And I don't know how you guys feel about this, but
okay,
I'm not a huge fan of Bruce Dickinson.
Like, who's that?
The singer.
Oh, tight. Yeah, me neither.
And the vocals in this song are a little too like whaley vibrato for me, but mm-hmm. overall I thought it was like a song that grew on me. I don't think it's necessarily a strong track for me on the album.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you. I think musically as a song one, it's really strong. Like the bass line's really strong. It's super like, it's very boppy, and it definitely works as a song one and like orienting yourself to how the album is going to be. A lot of songs are like kind of this tempo or close to it. Also not a big fan of his voice. That was a big deterrent for me in the album as a whole. There's certain songs, especially where that wailing vibrato you're talking about is happening. And that particularly drove me nuts a lot of the time. And I think it's funny, Michael, how you were like, the lyrical content was super strong for me. Like the images he was using and that kind of thing. For me, it was the opposite. I have said this before, but I'm somebody who likes to be able to emotionally connect to the music I'm listening to. And so storytelling music isn't always my favorite thing. And I felt like I wasn't able to like emotionally orient myself to a lot of these songs, which was difficult for me because I like to emotionally engage with music. So that was really tough overall. But I think this song certainly painted a clear picture. Musically, there's a lot of things I liked about it. There's some crazy high notes that he's got going on. There's like ascending and descending of the scale, which sounds really cool. And the chorus is really fun. I can see this song being super cool live. And I didn't look it up, but I imagine it would be super dope. And I would say this is one of the most memorable songs on the album. Like, it gets stuck in your head. This is one that I would find myself humming a lot, which is funny because it's definitely not one of my favorites on the album at all. It's towards the end, actually, of my ranking, but it would get stuck in my head a lot because I think there's something to be said about the melody line and how easy it, like the hook, how easy it is to get stuck in your head. But overall, I wasn't in love with it. I didn't hate it. I think it sounds like you're saying the same thing. It kind of just did what it was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. All right. So for any remaining Iron Maiden fans who haven't shut off the broadcast, please hang on. I actually really did enjoy this. In fact, I enjoyed the whole album. I thought it was just a good, jolly old good time, a good romp through some metal. You know, it's kind of can be a little ridiculous, but it's fun. The song, like Michael had said, is a straightforward tale of Viking invasion. It's an upbeat song. You get introduced to Bruce Dickinson's vocals right away. Love him or hate him. Invaders is about an invasion of England as seen through the eyes of a Saxon. That is according to Steve Harris. So obviously it's a very straightforward track. Harris also lamented that the record's opening track, Invaders, was not good enough, commenting that it could have been replaced with something a bit better. Only we didn't have anything else to replace it with at the time. We had just enough time to do what we did, and that was it. So it seems like he agrees with you guys. What would you say was your favorite moment of on this track or the track or the part of the track you want to showcase?
Yeah. So, the chorus I think is, like I said, super memorable and fun, and the ascension up the scale into it. So I would say verse one and chorus one, is the perfect introduction to this song and, the memorability of the chorus.
Lists can be very subjective, but a list that I keep referring to because I think it's probably the strongest list of metal albums ranked that exists and that's published is Rolling Stone's list of 100 greatest metal albums of all time. A lot of times I don't agree with Rolling Stone, but with that particular list, I find that they were very close to being spot on. They ranked this number 4 on that particular list, and I'm going to read an excerpt from that article. By the time Iron Maiden hit the studio with veteran producer Martin Birch to record their third LP in 1982, the English quintet had already clawed its way to the forefront of the so-called new wave of British heavy metal, having replaced gruff lead vocalist Paul Di'Anno with Bruce Dickinson, a charismatic performer with operatic pipes. The stage was set for a creative breakthrough. There was just one problem. The band had exhausted its backlog of tunes. They'd used up all the good stuff they'd had, and they'd been on the road ever since, Dickinson told biographer Mick Wall. So it was quite good in that way, because I wasn't going to be asked to sing words that had already been written by Paul, or songs Steve had written with him in mind. We had time to think about the songs first. Harris and his mates, including Dickinson, uncredited for contractual reasons, rose to the occasion, producing complex songs and heady lyrics that ideally suited the new singer's dramatic range. The resulting LP, recorded and mixed in just 5 weeks, is one of metal's all-time milestones. Galloping single Run to the Hills charted practically everywhere, but in the U.S., where the video nonetheless became an early MTV staple, the title track remains a set list fixture, and the closer, Hallowed Be Thy Name, was the first of Iron Maiden's signature epics and among the most durable. So there you go. Hmm. There's a little table setting for this album. Children of the Damned is the next song. Danielle, what did you think of this track?
I really liked this song. My top three songs on the album, one of them is Children of the Damned, are sort of interchangeable for me in that they're all kind of my favorite on the album, just depending on my mood. This song, the best way I can describe it is it sort of hilariously sounds like a song you would slow dance to at homecoming, and yet it's called Children of the Damned. It has that very like swaying kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
It certainly is not what you would expect given the title. Once you really get, you know, you get that stripped down intro, you get into the song. It has a very cool groove to it. It's just not something I would have expected to hear with a title like Children of the Damned. And there's a few other songs on this album that the title's really like out there. And then the song is like kind of boppy and you're like, wow, I didn't expect a song called this to sound like this. The high note at the end of the song just deserves a round of applause in general. That was just crazy. I was very proud of him.
so proud of you, Bruce.
Like, wow. Yes. I'm like, way to go, dude. I liked it. It was really fun. The electric solo was so very long. I was like, please, Lord, let it end sometime soon. But also the bridge, lines like melting his face, screaming in pain, peeling the skin from his eyes. It's quite alarming, but certainly clear imagery. They're very good at painting clear pictures. But this song I felt like was very fun, but also kind of chill. It gave that more chill vibe sometimes. So in some ways I feel like, and Michael, you can tell me what you think about this, but I don't know that this song was placed perfectly. I don't know that I would have put it at song two. What do you think about that? Because I feel like it, because of the chill nature of it, it would have been nicer probably later in the album.
Yeah. The album is only 8 tracks long and I never really considered it, but I think you're right. Putting Children of the Damned number two. Cause it's like way, way slower tempo. There's not really, it's got a bit of a double timed bridge, but like for the most part, it's a slower song.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that this would have been a better track three or four, I think.
I think so, too, just to give it some better pacing.
I do want to say that I don't think you'd want to have it before Number of the Beast.
No. No, I'm thinking switch The Prisoner and Children of the Damned or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, there would have to be a whole revamp of the layout of this album because there's songs later, too, that I don't think belong where they are either, personally. So
yeah, I can see that. I just think it's tough because I think then you would go basically Invaders is quick, then Children of Damn is sonically a little slower, then Prisoners picks it up, and so does 22 Acacia. I don't know. That is tough.
It would be challenging for sure.
It seems like the anchors of this album in terms of like setting a different pace are Children of the Damn, The Number of the Beast, and Hallowed Be Thy Name. So
yeah,
it'd be challenging. It's important to keep those tracks separated, I think. So, but yeah, it's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
So for me, this is one of my favorites on the album for exactly all the reasons that Danielle said. The chorus, this might be my favorite chorus on the entire album.
It's like, really strong.
The just the guitar riff that's kind of hammering away at this slower pace, like down, 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 down. It's like
Children of the Damned.
and you know what? The thing about it is there's still like the wailing vibrato in this song, but it works so much better on slow tracks than it does on fast tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's
for your ears.
For my ears, yeah. Like I like it in slower songs versus, you know, faster song. It's not really for me, but I thought the solo, Danielle, maybe you thought it was a bit long. I thought the solo was very, very good. It had there was like a harmonized guitar solo going on that
was sick. I like the harmonies.
It got me going. I think there was some tapping, like a really mm-hmm. fast tap solo. And the vocals at the end of the bridge. Oh, 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 oh.
Yeah, like, that was awesome.
Yeah. The song is one of my favorites on the album for sure.
Yeah.
Children of the Damned is a 1963 science fiction film, a thematic sequel to the 1960 version of Village of the Damned. It is about a group of children with similar psi powers to the original Village of the Damned, but enabling an opposite interpretation of the children being a more good and more pure form of human instead of totally evil and totally alien. So it's based on a film. And vocalist Bruce Dickinson said the song was also inspired by Black Sabbath's song Children of the Sea. Here is Children of the Damned. Prisoner is the next song we're going to be discussing. This song was inspired by a British television show of the same name. In it, a government agent is held captive in a village that seems idyllic. Idyllic? I-D-Y-L-L-I-C?
That's idyllic.
Idyllic? It's idyllic.
It's idyllic.
But actually, it's a prison. Seems idyllic. It's actually a prison. He's known... He's known only as Number Six. Who does Number Two work for?
That's all I can think about
and is constantly pressed for information. You know, but like I always say, seems idyllic. It's actually a prison. The show's episodes mostly revolved around Number Six attempting to escape the village of madness, mind control, and identity erasure. There was themes not frequently explored in TV to that point, or there were themes. So, with that in mind, Michael, what'd you think of The Prisoner?
Again, this was a song that took me at least two listens to appreciate fully. But I would like to say is it twice in this album that they use like these spoken intros from various like other media, right? Like mm-hmm. they do this and Number of the Beast. And I actually really like those. Like, who are you? The new number two. Who is number one? You are number six. Like, I don't know. I thought it was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. I agree.
Yeah.
Overall, the primary riff, like end of the day, I think musically, like, from what the guitars and drums are doing is like always very good.
Mm-hmm.
And this song is no exception. I know that I talked about the bass earlier. It's way up in the chorus, way up in the front, almost like taking over like maybe a little too loud, if I'm gonna be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay when you have the basis that Maiden does, and the main riff just really, this is another one of those catchy songs that I continue to hum or whatever, you know, like,
yes,
like,
yes,
like,
mm-hmm. Very catchy riff,
really, really catchy riff. So
yeah,
like I could see you know, like when Tom Cruise is in that movie where he's like dancing around his underwear.
Yeah, what?
What is that movie?
Risky Business. But,
yes, I could see him. I could see him like air guitaring to this. And plus, now I made you all picture Tom Cruise in his underwear. Suck it.
Overall, this song ends up kind of in the middle of my like ranking all of the songs on the album. It ends up somewhere in the middle, mm-hmm. which isn't okay. necessarily a bad thing. Like overall, I think this album's like pretty solid, but. This song is just kind of in the middle. It's a middle ground track for me, but
mm-hmm.
again, the instrumentals are always top notch.
Yeah. So I really, really like this song. This is one of the ones that I would say is tied for first.
Such a weirdo. Such a weirdo.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
No, you're not. you're definitely not. I really like a lot of things about this song. I love that spoken intro that Michael was talking about. Michael, I actually agree with some of the things that you were saying, though. I think they just don't like the bass being super hot and all those things. They don't necessarily detract for me personally, but I'm also, not listening to the same things that you are, and I'm not a musician either. So I don't have the ear for that kind of stuff as much as you do. But this chorus for me, and you can tell me what you think, Michael, is one of the catchiest, most boppy choruses on the entire album. It's so strong and it's so like gets stuck in my head all the time. It's almost like for me, I could see this chorus being mainstream. It has that very kind of not poppy feel to it, but that very like happy, bouncy kind of music that makes you feel good, which I really enjoyed about it. I really enjoyed listening to this song. This is one that I kept going back to over and over again. Actually, it was my solid first place for a while. And then Children of the Dam started really growing on me. And I was like, oh man, I think these might be tied. And then there's one a little bit later on that I'm like, oh no, now this is a third. So they're kind of all just tied for me. But this song just felt really good. And it was a lot of fun for me to listen to. It's so catchy. The riff is so cool. I just really enjoyed it. It felt like something I would love to listen to, like in my own time. This chorus was just so strong. I did feel like I was listening to it and I was like, you have to be joking me with this solo. I put in all caps. I'm like, please, Lord. I guess I'll just address this now. Something that I really appreciated about this album, is it really challenged me to focus on the musicality in a way that I haven't had to before. I have said this before and I will say this again, but I am very interested in hearing what bands have to say, lyrically. And Michael, you have said pretty much the opposite. Like mm-hmm. you focus yeah. a lot on the instrumentation and you're not as focused on what they say, which I think sort of makes this work really well for us to do this. But this album really challenged me to focus a lot on the musicianship and instrumentation because I didn't really care for the lyrics that much. There are some that I'll talk about later that I felt were incredibly strong. And I have, some thoughts about those, but at large, this album didn't do it for me lyrically. So I had to listen to the, instruments in a way that I haven't had to previously. And that was really fun for me because I am not somebody who focuses on that stuff naturally. I mean, certainly there are things that stand out, but that's not what I do on my own. That's not the first thing I notice. And I sort of had to with this, because there wasn't a lot to discover in the lyrics. They're pretty straightforward. There wasn't necessarily a lot of hidden meaning happening. So I'm really grateful for the experience on this album at large, but especially this song too, that just made me really focus on the how fun and just catchy the music is, in a way that I haven't had to on previous songs or albums that we've done before, because I've been so focused on what they're saying. So anyway, all that to say, this was really fun for me. This song is certainly tied for a top place, and I really enjoyed it.
I would like to reiterate your comment on the chorus. It is like, because of my history with some of the other songs on the album, like Number of the Beast and Run to the Hills, like those are like metal, like pinnacle songs, right? Like classic metal songs that if like anyone who's into metal has ever heard Iron Maiden, it's one of those two songs. And so those choruses really push those. I guess those songs are always kind of like lifted a little bit. But yeah, mm-hmm. the chorus on The Prisoner is one of the strongest on the album. So I would agree with you on that.
That brings us to our next song, which is 22 Acacia Avenue. The song is about Charlotte the Harlot, an object of infatuation for guitarist Dave Murray. In this installment, the narrator tells Charlotte that he can't stand seeing her whoring around and allowing men to abuse her. So he's taking her with him, away from her life of vice.
Charlotte, you can't be doing this anymore!
Oh, gosh.
Good Lord. Stop with your whoring. You're whoring and the men are abusing you. And I'm taking you with me.
Anyway.
Frodo.
Frodo.
Too soon.
Michael, what'd you think of this?
This song... I did some looking around. The first time I heard it, I was like, what the hell is this song?
Mm-hmm.
But then I got into the lyrics and I kind of figured out like, okay, it's like, there's this back and forth sort of, narrative that's happening where like in the verses, yeah. It's like this like almost like this sneaky guy is like, hey, you know, if you're like the opening lines are, if you're feeling down, depressed and lonely, I know a place where we can go. It's like this kind of the sleazy guy. And then the pre-chorus and then into the chorus moves into the story of someone, you know, like the man taking her out of this, out of the situation, which
like the rescuer.
Yeah. So it's like,
for God's sake, get out of here.
Exactly. Yeah, those are some, that's exactly how it sounds. And like I started to appreciate that more. It's like I thought some of the lyrics were kind of dumb and really cheesy. Like mm-hmm. like I said, if you're feeling down, depressed and lonely, like kind of dumb. But some of the lyrics I thought were, or some of the vocal delivery were really interesting. In the pre-chorus, and because like the way that the vocals are delivered, like when I was talking about the two characters, it seems in the story, the kind of the sleaze guy and the rescuer guy, like the vocal delivery completely changes, which I thought was really interesting. the rescuer almost has like this. He's almost like, it's almost like he throws in like some screams in there, which I thought was really interesting. Like the only time that happens on the album. And overall for me, it's a bit of a weaker song on the album.
Yeah.
Like in the bottom half of the album for sure. Again, like it seems that Iron Maiden follows a formula, and that is like, it's like their song, not that it's a bad thing, but their songs are very predictable, where it's like verse, chorus, bridge, and then like verse, chorus, and then the end. And you know, there's, again, like I said before, like really excellent instrumentals throughout. So there's no complaints from me there. I just thought the concept of the song was a little strange. I haven't heard the other, I guess this is the second of four songs. Is that what you said, Ty?
Yeah, I believe so. I can't get out of this character.
I haven't heard any of the other songs, so I don't know how the story goes.
I think some of the songs were written with his former band. You know what I mean?
Okay.
They're not across Iron Maiden. I don't know much more of the history other than...
Interesting. Okay.
Other than that, so...
Weird.
So yeah, those are my thoughts on 22 Acacia Avenue.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you. This song is solid last place for me. How do I say all this? There are some things that irked me about the song. I will start with the fact that the two most prominent things that irked me just to my ear were there's a lot of nasal singing happening, like nasal, like vibrato coming through his nose, like, and it sort of sounds like, I don't know if you know who Miranda Sings is. She's this YouTube star who kind of sounds like this, and I'm getting that vibe sometimes, and it is like, so that kind of irked me. And then there's a lot of talk singing happening, which I don't always love it when he does the talk singing. I feel like his strength isn't that always. So, and this song, if you had to break it down, is talk singing and then that like vibrato nasal kind of sound. So if those two things are what irked me, then this song wasn't going to do it for me, because that's pretty much what this song is. But there's some strong, like what you said, Michael, there's some strong lyrics happening here. There's some cool storytelling happening. Not obsessed with the fact that he wrote a song about a harlot, just me personally. I'm like, okay, you have a rescuer and you have the sleaze, but what about her perspective? Like why she's doing this. So I feel like there's these two perspectives, but there is a perspective missing personally for me. Wish we had gotten that. There's some parts that just feel a little cheesy, which I think I think you're getting at that too, Michael. There's some cheesiness going on a little bit. That's a little bit over the top. But some of the high notes are like super dope. There's some like serious musicianship happening in the song too. That's super cool. But overall wasn't really a slam dunk for me personally. Especially following songs like The Prisoner and Children of the Damned that really were strong songs for me. So honestly, to be fair, it would have been hard for any song to compete with those. But it just, you know, this song for me just wasn't a hit. It was more of a miss.
Music press reports told stories of unexplained phenomena occurring during the sessions at Battery Studios, such as lights turning on and off of their own accord, and the recording gear mysteriously breaking down. These odd occurrences climaxed when Birch was involved in a car accident with a minibus transporting a group of nuns, after which he was presented with a repair bill for 666 pounds.
Oh, dun, my God.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's the number of the beast, dun, guys.
Dun. What the fuck? Anyway.
Clearly Satan worship happening.
The album was also the center of controversy, particularly in the United States, due to the lyrics of the title track and the cover art depicting Eddie, who is the band's mascot, who is that zombie-looking creature, controlling Satan like a puppet, while Satan is also controlling a smaller Eddie.
Ooh.
It is explained that the concept was to ask, who's the real evil one here? Who's manipulating whom? According to Riggs, this was inspired by a Doctor Strange comic book, which had some big villain with Doctor Strange dangling on some strings like a puppet. It was something he read as a child back in the 60s. And anyway, that is part of that interpretation of the artwork. It's all devil spawn. I don't want my kids listening to no devil spawn. Anyway, that brings us to one of the most iconic metal songs of all time. Mm-hmm. Goes without saying, the number of the beast. It is an evil number. Its number is 666. What did you think of this, Danielle?
I can't believe how many accents you've done just so far. And we're at track 5. It's truly remarkable. So I really dug this song. And that's probably another reason why 22 Acacia just wasn't going to make it for me. Because, like, it's just stuck between all these songs I really like. So anyway, the number of the beast was so tight. It had this just amazing vibe to it. It's another song that the title makes you think that it's going to be one thing, and then it turns out it's something else entirely. You're very intimidated by a title, the number of the beast. And it doesn't do that. It's very boppy. It has a good feel to it. It's super fun. Honestly, this song felt for me like something you would see or something you would hear in like a 90s flick. It had that sort of like driving montage vibe or like kid getting ready for school kind of vibe for me. Which
nothing really reminds me of a kid getting ready for school than the number of the beast.
I know. That's what I'm saying. The title doesn't say anything about how the song sounds, at least to me.
I mean, I disagree, but it's interesting to hear this.
I'm curious, when you hear the title, when you hear the track title, Number of the Beast, what is your expectation?
Oh, like terrifying.
Okay.
Like the song is going to sound terrifying with like, just like creepy vocal effects and probably harder. Like okay. A song.
I feel like it is eerie though. Like when it starts with that guy reciting, and then it makes me think of somebody who's like creeping around in the woods and then they discover like some kind of sacrifice or something, like, you know, the story he tells. It's eerie to me. Mm-hmm. That's just my perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, you know, I think there's an expectation, at least there was for me, of the title to the song, and it just didn't fit what I thought it was going to. The synchronization of the beginning of the song is interesting. The synchronization of the verses and the instruments, some of that didn't, you know, was a little bit hard for me to adjust to. This is a song that I had to listen to a few times before I felt like I got the full understanding of the song, which is cool because now it's one of my favorites on the album. And I feel like it took me some time to sort of orient myself to the song, but I really like it now. It's like one of my top, that's tied for first place. And yeah, I just had a lot of fun with it. I think this also, I said the whole like 90s getting ready for school thing, but I also feel like this reminds me of the song that they played at the end of School of Rock. some of these songs had that vibe for me where I felt like Jack Black was singing them in the van to iCarly, whatever her name is, Miranda Cosgrove or whatever.
Yep.
So that also may have something to do with the fact that some of these songs made me happy despite their lyrical content, because I just imagine Jack Black singing all of them. But I really liked the song. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I know that Ty doesn't agree with, you know, the song sounding different than the title made me think it was going to sound, but that's cool.
He can suck a dick.
We talked about earlier, like the intro on the prisoner had like the, you know, from like a movie or TV or whatever. The spoken intro on the song is just so good.
It's phenomenal. It's like, chill inducing.
It's from, is it from a thing? Like, or is it just they got a dude to read it?
I think they
just got a dude to read it.
It starts with a quote from the Bible. It's read by British actor Barry Clayton. The first lines from Revelation 12:12 and the last three from Revelations 13:8. The band originally wanted horror film actor Vincent Price to read this intro. He wanted an astronomical amount of money to do that. So they didn't. But I think the guy who did read it did a very good job. And I'm glad I have the exact answer to your question.
Good job, Bill.
That the spoken intro is excellent. Moving into the main, or not the main, but the intro guitar riff, the the synchronization of that with
"Could I Believe?" I love that part.
I left alone.
Mind was blank.
So yeah,
it's a great song. Despite Bruce Dickinson, it's a great song.
No. Like, I don't. There's certain aspects of Bruce Dickinson that I don't like, and it just is very obvious on certain songs. And then
it just
works really well.
Well, right. This is a song that I don't think anybody else could pull off.
No,
but I agree with you. There are times where I'm like, I'm not really, and that's why you and I have never really liked Iron Maiden. I don't want to say we're haters, but like, it's almost like we only like their greatest hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not in for the deep dive, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
And of course the classic, you know, 666, the number of the beast.
Number of the beast. And how great that plays live. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't really, it's a great song, and I don't have much more to say about it. It's just a pinnacle of heavy metal.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's on, you know, right on par with like Iron Man in terms of these are like the Mount Rushmore of heavy metal songs. Mm-hmm. I think the Number of the Beast has to be on there, as does Iron Man. This song was the band's second single from the album. It was influenced by the 1978 horror movie Damien, Omen 2, which is about the 13-year-old Antichrist. It is obviously one of their most famous songs and heavy metal's most recognizable songs. Steve Harris says, basically, this is a song about a dream. It's not about devil worship. And although many were confused about that, Bruce Dickinson's high-pitched scream at the end of the intro was a result of producer Martin Birch forcing the band to replay the intro several times. Dickinson became so fed up with it that he admitted that scream out of frustration, and it fits so well the band decided to keep it, and he's never been able to recreate it.
Wow.
That's cool.
That is really cool.
That's what I'm here for. Let's play some of the Number of the Beast.
Just breathe.
that brings us to probably the first, actually, I shouldn't say probably, it's most definitely the first Iron Maiden song I ever heard.
Same.
Which is Run to the Hills. And let's just get down and dirty. Michael, what'd you think of Run to the Hills?
So it's
we've only heard this song a million times.
It's not often that like you get an album with like two songs back to back that are like classic, ultimate classic metal songs.
Not I don't know if that ever happens.
Run to the Hills. I don't know. Like maybe on like I'm trying to think of you even go back to like an old Slayer or Metallica album. I don't think that that's a thing.
Like yeah, maybe... you know what? Do you get Battery Master of Puppets, though?
Yeah, you do.
And okay.
That's arguably a better combo.
Yeah, arguably. But
arguably.
Yeah, I think it is arguably, though, because, you know, the Number of the Beast is like I said, that's a Mount Rushmore song.
Mm-hmm.
And Run to the Hills is almost right up there with that. Anyway.
Yeah. It is interesting, and it is very, very rare, obviously. And the only thing that I have to say about this song is that it is, I'm going to say it's probably one of the inspiration songs for me playing bass because of,
the galloping bass line.
Steve Harris's like galloping bass lines and stuff. Like, he's got, I'm almost certain he plays with his fingers. I know for a fact he plays with his fingers, and it's like,
yeah,
like this really, you know, he uses three fingers to play that galloping lead, and it's just like,
wow,
a big source of inspiration for me. So, the in general, I think the concept of the song is good. I think I enjoy the all the lyrics. You know, it's basically documenting the Native Americans being, you know, forced out of their homes in the New World, and it's a classic song, and I love it. It's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. not one of my favorites. I think I just struggled. Well, let me start with this. I think the harmonies on the chorus are dope. That made me so happy. They're so tight. There's some of that talk singing happening again. That isn't my favorite thing. Sometimes I was getting vibes of like a dad committing fully to a sock puppet performance with like just that very like duh, pa-cha. And it's just not my thing. And there was some of that happening, so that was took me out a little bit, and that's just me. That's totally a personal thing. It's really dope that at the beginning of the song the vocal melody and the melody coming in on the guitar are like syncing up. That's super cool. It feels pretty stripped down, like letting that main melody line come to the front. That's super tight. I am not, you know, in love with the storytelling in this song necessarily. I think, you know, it's, you know, I guess I should tread carefully here, but I don't necessarily want to hear a white person talking about what white people did to the Native Americans. That's just personal. You know, but I think it's a very interesting storytelling, and clearly this song was a hit for them. Like, it was super strong. And, so yeah, I think there's a lot of musicianship that's happening. That's super dope. I love the harmonizing in the chorus. You know me, I'm a sucker for a good harmony. Lyrically, it wasn't my favorite, but there's just other songs that I think did it better for me. So I would say this is lower in my ranking, but it's really hard to compete with songs like Children of the Damned, that just were really, really strong for me. So yeah, I guess that's my feelings summarized. Not my favorite, not my least favorite.
I do want to clarify, just so people don't get too enraged, it does write from both perspectives.
Yes.
It's not just the European's perspective. It's from both, which I think is daring.
Yes. And
I like it.
Yeah.
I appreciate hearing both perspectives. The song documents the conflict that occurred between European settlers in the New World and Native American tribes, like Michael said, during the days of colonization and later westward expansion, and takes both viewpoints. One of the first songs I ever heard, and that drum beat that I'm surprised you guys didn't mention, that grabs my attention right away. The do, 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 dee, do, do. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they were trying to emulate maybe like native drumming, with that particular beat in mind, but it kind of makes me think of that. Mm. And again, the you know, like that build up, is probably one of my favorite moments in
that
heavy metal
so
history.
Cool.
So
I loved that. That was so cool.
The album was strongly opposed by social conservatives, especially in the United States, where Iron Maiden were accused of being Satanists. Public burnings of the band's catalog were organized, although some religious groups smashed the records with hammers for fear of inhaling fumes from burning vinyl. The Beast on the Road tour was subject to numerous boycotts and demonstrations. Venues were sometimes surrounded by activists who handed out leaflets, and in one case, a 25-foot cross was carried in protest. Harris has stated it was mad. Oh, excuse me. It was mad. They completely got the wrong end of the stick. They obviously hadn't read the lyrics. They just wanted to believe all that rubbish about us being Satanists. I just spit all over my microphone.
You went from like John Lennon to Julia Child.
And I just got to say, I mean, if you read the lyrics, they aren't like there's no Satan worship to be had in this album.
No, no.
So anyway, that brings us to what I view personally. And I know this is your guys' opinions, but I view as probably one of the biggest missteps on the entire album. And that is Gangland. All right. Danielle, what do you think?
Yeah. On the lower half of my ranking as well. The synchronization at the beginning of the song totally threw me for a spin. I listened to this song so many times and I just could not orient myself at the beginning. It just felt like it didn't sync up for me. I tried so hard and I just couldn't, I had to just get through that part, honestly, and then get to the rest of the song. Cause that beginning part just didn't land for me. The ascending scale that happens in verse 3, there's some really dope stuff happening in verse 3 leads into the chorus, which is my favorite part of the song personally. There's some minor chords happening that are gorgeous. I'm a sucker for a minor chord. Love that. I feel like this song is really repetitive, so it has that going for it. Even though it's one of my least favorite songs on the album, it's a song that could easily get stuck in my head because this is something that they're really good at, having a really repetitive and also memorable melody line, I think. There's a lot of textures and stuff happening in the verses where they really experiment a lot. And then their choruses are solid, like staples on the album. So it has a very memorable chorus. But musically, I just don't think the song was as complex or as interesting as other songs on the album that did it so strongly. Obviously, verse 3 being the exception for me personally. And he sort of has some of that nasal vibrato stuff that we've been talking about so far that's happening on this song that doesn't land for me, just some stuff that rubs me the wrong way. But like I said, super memorable. There's some really cool stuff happening in certain parts of the song, but I agree with you overall, Ty. I think it was not one of the best ones on the album for me. What do you think, Michael?
I think we all agree on the quality of Gangland relative to the rest of the tracks. It's like, again, it probably sound like a broken record here, but like the instrumentals are always there in some capacity. They're definitely weaker here. I think the like the repetitive nature of the, like, if it was like a super dope riff, you know, you can repeat that till the cows come home, but it's like, it's only okay. And like the chorus is catchy, you know, dead men tell no tales. Like, it's not too bad, but it's like not enough for, you know, like it, there's just not enough of anything that's good.
Yes.
Like, of anything that's great. Like, it's all kind of okay. And it is just completely uninteresting.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you're competing with other songs on this album that are incredibly strong.
Yes. Like, this could be probably an okay song, like a decent song on a different album, but like it's, you know, it's kind of whatever. I don't know that this song even has a right to be on this album. Like, this album should be seven songs long, not eight.
You heard it here first. I do not disagree with you. Do you agree, Ty?
Well, I just think there was a huge missed opportunity to have The Number of the Beast followed by Run to the Hills followed by Hallowed Be Thy Name. That'd be one of the strongest three-track closings
so
in all of metal.
So true. Mm. So you know? True.
Yeah.
So this song is about fear and uncertainty of a life in something like a 30s Al Capone gangland situation. When the band released Run to the Hills as a single, they decided between this song and Total Eclipse, which is a B-side single, I guess, or as the B-side single, excuse me. So Run to the Hills would have been the A single, Gangland or Total Eclipse would have been the B side. The other song would be chosen for the album in terms of like Run to the Hills is already going to be on the album. It's the lead single. And they were trying to decide between Gangland or this song that we're not going to discuss or play called Total Eclipse. They had to decide which one. The band hastily decided that Total Eclipse should be the B side, which the band has regretted ever since. We just chose the wrong track as the B-side. I think if Total Eclipse... Oh, my gosh, I'm not doing his accent again. We just chose the wrong track as the B-side. I think if Total Eclipse had been on the album instead of Gangland, it would have been far better.
There's definitely some Aussie coming through there.
So even like they don't like this song?
That was confusing. When I was confused reading it, but I think basically... To make this simpler for everybody, they had to decide whether to put Gangland or Total Eclipse on the record, and they chose to put Gangland, and they've regretted it.
Mm.
So, and that's Steve Harris. That was a quote from Steve Harris that I read.
Okay. I get it. Makes sense to me. I mean, it's only okay.
So I guess let's play it or whatever. Closing track on this album is Hallowed Be Thy Name. And I'm just going to put this out there while I have a minute to speak. Probably one of my favorite, probably my favorite Iron Maiden song of all time. I just really like everything that's happening with this album. The song is a somber reflection of a prisoner on the day of his death sentence. And the listener is given no context regarding the prisoner's crime. But it's instead treated to an introspective look at the meaning of life as he kind of contemplates his final hours. And, the title of the song, Hallowed Be Thy Name, comes from the Lord's Prayer. You can look it up. I'm not going to recite the entire Lord's Prayer. This song quickly became one of Iron Maiden's most acclaimed works, with several bands recording covers of it. And this song may or may not have inspired Metallica's similarly themed Ride the Lightning track. So, I can't remember who went first last time.
There's Daniel.
All right. Michael, what have you to say of Hallowed Be Thy Name?
What say you?
I say that this is definitively, without a doubt, 100% my favorite song on this album. I think it's head and shoulders above all of the other songs. Like, the maybe not head and shoulders, but yeah, I'm gonna commit. I'm a full commit. I think this song is way better than any of the other songs, both in the lyrics and the like the vocal delivery. And I mean, this is more than two things, but the lyrics, the vocal delivery, and all of the instrumentals, it's all like right on the money. Like the way the intro comes in with these kind of eerie guitar sections with like, there's like a bell going off in the distance, and it moves into this verse with this, like the guitar is like, it's kind of a stripped down version of the main verse riff, and it just kind of like builds and builds and builds. And the extended instrumental section at the end, I know, Daniel, you're probably not going to dig it, but for me, it was just
pure bliss. It's pure bliss.
It's just so good. Like this song is just amazing.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so good. I really liked this song too. And this song, like I listened to it. I had an aha moment with this song, where I listened to it many times. It was at, you know, it's in the latter half of the album, which for me, much like the last album we did, I felt like wasn't the strongest half. I feel like the first half had a lot going for it. The second half for me was weaker. And so I was kind of had a little fatigue. And so this song kind of, I slept on it. I really did. And then as I listened to it more and more, I'm like, whoa, 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 wait, pause. Okay. You got to take yourself out of whatever you're feeling in those other songs, because this is like a gem. This song is really tight. So I had an aha moment for sure. And now this song is like objectively probably the best song on this album. There's just lyrically, there's so much cool stuff happening. It's so just interesting lyrically. I really like verse two, which says, "Somebody please tell me that I'm dreaming. It's not easy to stop me from screaming. The words escape me when I try to speak. Tears flow, but why am I crying? After all, I'm not afraid of dying. Don't I believe there's never an end?" I feel like this song tackles something really interesting, which is we all face the end at some point. And when you face the end, no matter what you believe, you certainly, everybody will probably have doubts and questions, right? Like, did I believe the right thing? Or did, you know, even if that means believing in God, if that means believing in nothing, did I believe the right thing? And what's going to happen to me when I die? Like, do I believe there's never an end? Do I believe my soul is immortal? Do I believe there's just black? You know, we just become nothing. I think for me, this song gave me just images of somebody at the end of their life wondering, like, you know, did I believe the right thing? Did I not believe the right thing? You know, just these introspective questions about who we are in the universe and what we believe at the end was so interesting. And it also, I feel like, tackled some age-old questions that we have. Is God real? If God is real, why do bad things happen to me? If God is real, why do bad things happen to good people? You know, these staple questions that we have just as human beings when it comes to religion and where we fit in the grand scheme, was so interesting to put into a song, and such an epic song like this one. They're tackling something so large scale and putting it into something that sounds so beautiful. Like I said, I slept on it. It really grew on me. I was, at the beginning when I first heard it a few times, didn't dig the intro. So I was like, oh, that took me out, but that totally grew on me too. This song just took time for me. Whereas on Master of Puppets, I loved Master of Puppets, like out the gate. And I was like, yep, this is it. This is the one. I think this song is the one. I think it just took me a while to get there. I really had to do some digging in this song. I have the most notes on this song by far out of any of the tracks, just because they tackled something lyrically so interesting. And I think this was such a strong way to end the album. At first, I wasn't sure that this placement was right when the song, you know, didn't click with me. And once it did, I think what better song to end on than an epic like this one? I just loved it. Michael, you're exactly right. The instrumental section was, I was getting a little fatigued there. But it was really strong nonetheless. And this song was just very interesting, and it really challenged me, to think about things, which I love when a song can do that, that will really challenge me and make me think. So I loved this song. It was really good and really fun and a really great way to end the album.
You know, there's there's two things I think that differentiate this song from, I think, all of the other songs, and that is the, I mean, it's still kind of a narrative story in the lyrics, but it is more cerebral, I guess.
Yeah.
There's more maybe things to think about and chew on in terms of the lyrics. And there is no choruses in this song. It's just verses. That's all it is. And like, that's very different than, I mean, granted, there's like a bridge with, it's like an extended instrument. It's like more or less just an instrumental section, not so much a bridge. And I don't know if like those two things help it in terms, I don't know if it's just like the song itself is strong enough, or if it's the differentiation of this song compared to the structure of all the other songs also potentially helps in its success as a great song on the album.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think something that Michael and I have learned as we've been reviewing albums and tracks for the better part of a year and a half now since starting this podcast is that listener fatigue is a very real thing. So it can also like shadow your judgment sometimes. So we typically, when we're reviewing albums, we listen to the first half of the album exclusively for a while, and then we listen to the second half exclusively for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that has been something that I agree with, that sometimes if you listen to an album front to back in one sitting, you get fatigued as the album goes along just by nature of like the law of diminishing returns or something like that. But so, yeah, that can certainly be a reason why tracks later in an album can be viewed as weaker. Sometimes they really are. But I think a lot of that, I think listener fatigue is a very real thing. So,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
I just got to say that the leads in the song are some of my favorite in metal. The like, to me, those act as a chorus.
Yeah. It's like a little vocal break or a little. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like the guitar is taking over for the chorus, because that's probably one of the catchiest parts of the song. And I remember, you know, you're just immediately placed into this track and into this cell when the song starts. I remember when I was younger and I listened to the part where it's like, 'cause 5 o'clock, they take me to the gallows pole. The sands of time for me are running low, running low. Like, that was like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's iconic.
Those are like chills, like a chills moment.
Especially when you're a young kid first discovering this genre and you're like, holy shit. Like, it's like we always talk about the, this is going to make no sense to Danielle, but the metal orb of power. And that, that makes you want to grab on to the metal orb. It's when a vocalist clenches one of their hands around a fictitious orb.
Oh, yeah.
And like uses that to kind of like access this power of vocal prowess. And I feel like when he does that part of the song, he's accessing it.
Yeah.
And then after he channels that metal orb of power, then he's like ready to go for the rest of the song. I think when you have that kind of a moment, you know that you're an all-time vocalist or in an all-time band. Regardless of this guy doesn't, you know, if Bruce Dickinson doesn't like connect with us as much, I think that's more of a preference thing. Because this is, you love them or hate them, this is an iconic band. One of the greatest of all time. And this is just a small part. I mean, albeit this is probably what they would consider Iron Maiden's finest hour. Across their catalog, they have a lot of iconic songs that obviously we didn't get to listen to today. But anyway, let's play a little piece of Hallowed Be Thy Name.
Yeah.
All right. We have reached the end of our journey. Iron Maiden, the number of the beast. Danielle, you don't have to give us a huge monologue, but sum up this album as efficiently as you can.
Yeah. So, not my favorite album that we've done, especially following such a banger like Master of Puppets. For me, there was a lot of strengths and a lot of weaknesses overall. There's some stuff I really enjoyed and some stuff I didn't enjoy so much. Like I said before, lyrically, this album, didn't really do it for me as much as other stuff we've listened to so far, but musically, there's a lot of strength. So I'm really happy that I listened to this album. It challenged me to listen to the music in a way that I don't naturally. And it helped me focus on it more than the lyrics, which is not something I do naturally. So I'm really thankful for the experience in that regard. I thought there was some strengths and some weaknesses, but overall I'm really glad I listened to it. So thanks for having me listen to it.
Michael, how would you sum up this album?
I think, overall, I think it is a great album. I am not sure, though, how I feel about Rolling Stone's fourth place ranking it has in the 100 greatest metal albums of all time. That's a little surprising, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree.
And I think Bruce Dickinson is an iconic frontman. When he nails it, he nails it. Like Danielle was saying, there's a lot of strengths, but also a lot of weaknesses. I think that absolutely applies to Dickinson's vocals. And honestly, that's probably just personal preference for me. Like, there's a reason why they're considered one of the greatest metal bands of all time. But yeah, at times, like, the delivery just wasn't necessarily there for me. But on a song like Hallowed Be Thy Name, the vocal delivery was like, couldn't get any better.
Mm-hmm. So, and you know, I feel like this album deserves to be in like the top 20 somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But like with tracks like Gangland and 22 Acacia Avenue, I just feel like that prevents it alone for me from being a top 10 album. It just weakens it a little bit. It has some spots. Those spots are glaringly weak if you're going to put it into a top 10. Whereas Master of Puppets, I mean, albeit Master of Puppets was number 2 on that list, but that album is practically flawless.
And it should not be so close to Master of Puppets on that list.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean,
Master of Puppets is like, do you have any idea what like number 1 is?
Yeah, it's Black Sabbath's Paranoid, which I have a lot of issues with myself. I get that they were the prototypical band, but I still think Master of Puppets, and I know I'm a big Metallica fan, but I mean, that album is practically flawless. It is. So
yeah, having it that close. Do you happen to know what number 3 is?
I would say it is. Let me think here. I will guess, and then I'll see if I'm right. I think number 3 is British Steel by Judas Priest.
Okay.
And I'm right. So, okay.
Yeah, that fourth place ranking is a little suspect, honestly. I don't think it's the fourth greatest metal band metal album of all time.
And honestly, if we're going to, I mean, because I know we'll get into Judas Priest eventually, this high vocal delivery with some vibrato, I think, is done more to perfection by Rob Halford of Judas Priest.
Without a doubt.
Like that guy, that's like I've always said. I mean, I will tease it a little bit because I know we'll eventually get into Judas Priest, but that guy has like my dream vocals. He's so good. Able to hit that high register and vibrato, but able to do it in such, I don't know. He knows his strengths more, I guess, or something, mm-hmm. but again, it could be a preference thing, but this album has like really great moments. I mean, Hallowed Be Thy Name for me, Run to the Hills, The Number of the Beast, and, Children of the Dam, I agree with. Those are all very the top 4, I think, yeah, on this album.
The album strengths are rarely outmatched, but the weaknesses are pretty apparent.
Pretty glaring.
Okay, so the big question, what percent rating, 0 being terrible, 100% being a masterpiece, would you give this album?
55, I'd say.
All right, so let's mark that down. So for those keeping track at home, because I'm better about this now, of all the albums we've done, Run to the Hills reaches the lowest
number of the
rating by, or excuse me, Run to the Hills. Yeah. Yeah, the Number of the Beast reaches the lowest ranking that Danielle has ever ranked. Mm-hmm. 55%. Paranoid came in at 65%. Rainbow's Rising came in at 80%. And Master of Puppets reached an 88%.
Mm-hmm. Dang.
So,
Michael, was that brutal of
55?
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's your ranking.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you give it, Michael? I mean, we don't care as much about your ranking, but.
I don't have it. Like, this is arbitrary. I've never done this.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think it's unreasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm personally giving it like a 60 to 65%.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm not totally off base here.
Yeah. But you're also talking to two guys who are not that into Iron Maiden. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like an Iron Maiden fan gives this album like 100%.
Probably.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I'm trying to be as objective as I can. So if I take my prejudices of Iron Maiden out of the equation, I mean, maybe I give it a 70 or 75.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think, like, on the whole, like, we are being objective. And I think with Gangland on there and 22 Acacia and even to a certain extent Invaders, for me, The Prisoner, I don't know. It's just like some of those just aren't as strong when compared to other albums I know that are.
Yes.
That I think are superior. Yep. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I still, I, you know what? Fuck it. 60 to 65% is what I'm giving it.
Okay, cool.
So, okay. My next question is James Hetfield, who's the lead vocalist of Metallica, versus Dio, who sang on that Rising album, versus Ozzy Osbourne on Paranoid, versus Bruce Dickinson. Who is the best one? Who is the one you've liked most so far?
Golly. It's hard to remember them all in isolation. Probably Metallica's vocalist. I don't know his name. I'm very sorry.
James Hetfield.
Mm-hmm. He is first. Then Dio is mm-hmm. two.
Mm-hmm.
Then Ozzy and mm-hmm. the Bunch. And then this guy's in last.
Yeah. Who's the Bunch?
Ozzy and the Bunch. Just the rest of the band. I mean, he's probably the only one singing, but I just didn't want to isolate it. Ozzy I didn't want to exclude anybody Ozzy else Bunch? In that band.
The Ozzy Bunch. Well, thank you. Thank you. I'll try my best.
That's what they should have called. What was that reality show that the Osbournes was? That was
the
called?
Osbournes.
They should have just called it the Ozzy Bunch.
Yeah. And then had like a Brady Bunch weird intro song.
Yes, that is exactly what's in my head right now.
Me too. Not getting
that's
it
the
out.
Way we became the Ozzy Bunch.
Oh my god.
Okay, so
I'm so done.
We do this once a month. About you know we have since the beginning of 2019. So expect another. Great album, iconic album coming your way in May. It's usually the third or fourth week in of the month, I should say. And that's all I got. Anything else you guys have to add?
I am glad that I finally got to dig into an Iron Maiden album front to back, which is good. I think I'll probably have to go explore more of it.
Yeah, more of their discography.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, remember that you can find us on all social media. Give us a like and follow there. Check out our website, www.supermetalworld.com. It's the easiest place to find all of our past episodes, as well as some blogs and things of that nature. Anywhere that you stream a podcast is where you can listen to us. Please subscribe and rate and review and share with a friend and all those lovely things. Send us an email, supermetalworld@gmail.com. Iron Maiden fans, certainly let us have it. I don't care. I mean, I feel the way I feel, but if you have like a devil's advocate or a different point of view, I'd really like to hear it personally. So, horns high.
Horns high.